The title of this message is Caring in the Human Health Experience. And so this is the focus of the discipline of nursing. And I know that we're greater than nursing here, but I think that it all comes back because we all care. I used a verse out of Galatians in my first presentation. Curtis used Galatians yesterday, and I'm going to use Galatians again today, and because I think that that really shows part of the caring that we do as Christians. So caring in the human health experience, what does that mean? We like to label things. We like to title things. It gives us a reference point, connecting point. I had shared earlier that the discipline of nursing is kind of, we've been around for a while. Nursing, obviously, we all know Florence Nightingale, and before then there's even more to go. Has anybody in here read Notes on Nursing by Florence Nightingale? It's a really good read, and I think nurses should read it. I had to read it for one of my PhD classes, and I'm glad I did. It's one of those books that, like, I'm not going to, like, throw away or give away or, you know, resell it. I'm going to keep it because it's really interesting to see where nursing as a profession, where healthcare as a profession has come. In the 16 years that I've been a nurse, it's amazing what little things have changed or what I've had to relearn as a nurse. You know, when I first started out, we had hep locks. Nurses now know saline locks. Like, we don't do hep locks. When I was in nursing school, and this may surprise some of you older nurses, in nursing school, you know, we tested the Foley balloon to see that it would test. We don't teach that now. We don't test them. We don't even aspirate. We don't even teach aspiration of starting IM injections, right? Little things like that have changed since I've been a nurse and in nursing school, and I get to follow along with all of these changes. But where nursing has come, and so Notes on Nursing by Florence Nightingale is a really good book to kind of get back to the caring aspect of nursing and where we have come from, and I think where we're going. So there was a nurse theorist, her name was Marlene Smith. I've actually got to work with her. She did a lot of research on to try to define what nursing is and as a discipline on its own. And so she came up with, after reviewing a lot of literature, Notes on Nursing by Nightingale, and she came up to say that the focus of the discipline of nursing is caring and the human health experience. I agree with that 100%. A little bit more of this definition goes on to say it's the intentions, the expressions, the behaviors, the actions, and experiences grounded in a moral, ethical, spiritual foundation that nurtures humanization, health, healing, and well-being. That's pretty nice, right? And this is coming, I don't know if Marlene Smith is a Christian. I don't know where her grounding is, but that sounds, you know, pretty faith-based to me. And it's kind of what we do. It's this whole continuum that is happening. The intentions, our intentions, what we intend on doing, our expressions. Think about our communication. We have verbal or spoken communication, and then we have, my wife said the other day, Matthew, why were you holding your hands like this? And I said, because I was waving them too much when I was up here and I wanted to put them here. Our nonverbal communication, are we going into our patient's room? Are we opened? Are we getting down to their level? Are we hovering over them? I love to get down on the patient's level. Our behaviors, our actions, and experiences all come together to form this humanization, healing, health, and well-being. You know, the past few years, like, I have experienced some burnout in nursing, especially when working in the ER there at the end. I kind of questioned, like, I remember there was one evening I was driving home from work, and I was questioning, like, if I was 20 again, would I go back into nursing? Would I do it? And, like, I really questioned that. And I can say today that I am truly proud. I'm proud. I have pride. I'm truly proud of being a nurse, and I'm truly proud of where I've come and how far I've come and where I'm going in nursing profession. And I hesitate when I say the word proud because that always has a negative connotation, right? Especially in conservative Anabaptists, we're prideful that we have no pride. And with that being said, I found people, you know, being proud in their ugly car because they don't have a fancy car. That's still pride. But I think that we can be confident without being proud. And I think that's something that we as medical healthcare professionals need to be sure of. We have confidence that we can go into these patients' lives and these rooms and do our job effectively. And it's not prideful to say, you know what, I'm good at my job. Okay, because I know people that are good at their job. It's when we don't give the credit or the glory to God that becomes prideful. One of my favorite verses, it's been one of my favorite verses as long as I can remember, is 2 Corinthians 3:5. And basically the gist says that I'm not nothing of myself, but God is my sufficiency. Some translations will say God is my adequacy. So I think nothing of myself, but our sufficiency is of God. And that's where I can draw my confidence from, because sometimes I can second guess myself, and especially in those moments of weakness when I'm tired, when my hands are tired, I can second guess myself. How many of you have driven home from work and said and did the mental checklist? Like, did I give that med? Oh, I didn't hand my phone off. Oh, I didn't clock out. That guy asked me for a glass of water. I didn't give it to him. And then you feel guilty. You know, and especially in those moments, I think, man, am I fit to do this job? But I know that I am at the end of the day, and that I'm adequate and sufficient through God. And, you know, and so that's a verse that I've loved for so long. So I'm going to read in Galatians. We're going to read chapter 6. There is no chapter 10 in Galatians. Chapter 6. Maybe there is. No. Chapter 6, 1 through 10. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in fault, which ye are spiritual, restore such a one to the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think of himself to be something, when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Going back to 2 Corinthians 3:5. I don't think anything of myself, but Christ is, or God is my adequacy. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, or for whosoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth in his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth in the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Verse 9 especially, this is something that I've repeated to myself over and over again. The other night we had a church member call, and I hate phones. I hate talking on phones. I'll text. I'm starting to like WhatsApp, but I really do not like phones, and I kind of leave it in my car, or it'll be dead. Like, it's been dead most of the weekend. People know that if they can't get me, they get hold of my wife, and that's good because she always has her phone with her. I've never liked talking on the phone. It makes me really nervous. I don't know why. I like talking face-to-face. Like, if I need my car fixed or something, well, Amy does it for me now, but I'd rather walk into the garage and talk to the man and say, this is what happens, or this is what I need, then call him. I don't know why. That's just part of me. But we get, you know, lots of calls. You know, the good thing is in our church we have a few nurses. Kevin is also in our church there at Mountain View, and he kind of takes care of the southern end, and some of the northern end too, and I'm more up in the northern end, so we get a lot of phone calls. Anyway, the other night we got a couple phone calls, and I just looked at my wife and I said, you know, I'm not in the mood. And that sounds horrible, doesn't it? Have you been there? It's like, I'm not in the mood. Like, I don't have the energy today. And like, you know, and then I was, you know, it's like the poor me, like, why does anybody just call to say hi? Like, why do they always have to have a problem? And we were sitting there talking about it, and finally my wife called them back. And here, apparently this lady forgot to teach Sunday school class, and so our oldest son didn't have a Sunday school teacher, and she felt guilty and just wanted to call and say that she was sorry that she wasn't there. It was nothing medical, and it's like, oh, well, shame on us. You know, we should have... And we would have answered, and I don't always feel like that. But, like, some days it's like, I just don't have the energy. Like, I just don't have the energy to do it today. But I'm very grateful, and at the end of the day, I'm very grateful and very thankful that I have the ability to serve my community in that way. And it's almost, yeah, I can serve my community in that way. But this verse, verse 9, often comes to my mind when doing that. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And, you know, working in the emergency room for all those years, and sometimes even working in education, which is not, like, in education I go to work and I don't do CPR on a daily basis. You know, typically when I take students into the hospital, like, the nurse is over the patients, I'm just with my students, so... You know, the buck doesn't fall on patient care on me. The education of the students falls on me. And so, you know, things like that is good. But still, some days when I was working in the emergency room, like, it would take a lot of things. Like, Jesus loves this patient, and he died for them too, so I can care for him for 30 minutes that he's here. You know, and I would remind myself, do not grow weary, do not grow weary, do not grow weary. It was almost like a mantra there for a while as I was taking care of patience. So here, Paul was talking to the church, and chapter 5, he is talking about living in God's Spirit. In chapter 6, he's continuing that to tell us how Spirit-led Christians can serve one another, caring for each other, caring in the human health experience. I think this is applicable to us as Christians in healthcare. I think this is applicable for, where's the nurse caretaker? And I hope that you're caring for your community too. It doesn't fall just on us healthcare workers, but everyone should care for one another. We just have some credentials behind our name that make us a little bit more official, right? Ministry, I said I'm not a minister, but ministry is wearying. Right? People are exhausting. People are messy. Even good people that have it together, really, do they have it together? You know, that's one of the things, like when I was saying, like when we got those couple phone calls, like talking to myself, you know, I don't have the energy. A lot of times people avoid ministry because it's messy. You know what? Like, I am often amazed by people who are ministering to the least of these. You know, the people that are constantly dragging these, you know, strays from the community into our churches, that, like, man, I don't know how they do it. But they do it, and they do it well. Maybe I was a stray that Amy drug into church, and they look at me that way. But people are messy. Ministry is messy, and it's hard. But I truly think here, we're talking about in the Spirit, doing our work in the Spirit, we can draw from that strength that only Christ gives. Human health experience is a continuum. I loved yesterday in my small group, and I appreciate, I don't know what your small groups were like, but I really enjoyed the Matu, and I enjoyed the conversation, and I bless you for being able to speak out and be vulnerable and talk. I really enjoyed it, and we were talking about end-of-life care last night, and someone said everybody's death experience is, there's a story just like everyone has a birth story. Everyone has a death story, and I love that. And it's kind of like that human health experience. There's so many influences, so many variables about how we were raised, our culture, our diet, what we think about this, where we live in the world. Everything affects this human health experience. We affect each other's human health experiences as well. And it's a beautiful, complicated thing that we have the honor to be a part of. And that's something that I don't want to lose sight of. So maybe you guys aren't weary. Maybe it's just a couple of us. But I think that we all kind of grow weary. And for me, I said I have a mantra sometimes. It's like, you know, God is my sufficiency. Don't grow weary. Don't grow weary in doing good. Another thing that often helps me when I am to that point where, you know, like I'm drawing near burnout, and this can be for any, like I go back to my first love, well, I go back to my first love, which is Jesus Christ, and draw strength from there, but I go back to my love of why I'm here, why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so when I teach my nursing classes, the first day of class, I give them an index card, and I tell them to put their name, their phone number, what they like to do, who their support systems are, or who their support system is, and why they're here. Why did they choose to be a nurse? And I love reading the responses. And I do this for a couple reasons, because I want their phone number in case they don't show up to clinical or class. Like, I can check on them. I'll text them. I like to see this because I like to see what they're interested in and see if I can draw a connecting point. I like to see who their support system is, because I have found out in my years of nursing education that those students that are most successful have a fantastic support system. They have a husband that's willing to eat frozen pizzas for supper. They have a group of friends that they can study with. They have a parent that's willing to pay a car payment for them when they're doing their preceptorship and in school so much, and maybe can only drop down and only drop down to part-time. People with support systems typically are really successful. So when people come in and maybe they're not doing so well in class, like I'll pull out this card and I'll look to see what's going on. And then I can have a real conversation with them, a personal conversation about how I can meet their needs as an educator and what I can do. Anyway, so I have them write down while they're here. So I brought some of these cards from the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, and I just picked out a couple. I didn't get their permission to see if I can read this. You don't know them. But I'm going to read some of these so that you can maybe be inspired. This young lady says, I want to be a nurse because when my uncle had his accident, it was the nurses who checked on me and my family. It helped us so much. I want to do that for others. Also, the pay isn't bad either. Rarely do I ever have a student that will say, because the money's good. When they put, because the money's good, like I keep an eye on them. Because it ain't about the money, right? It ain't about the money. This young lady said, I'm very supportive for other people and tend to be someone people always talk to about my problems, including strangers. How many of us attract those people? Like, it's like, I don't know, this energy that we give off. It seems like people just naturally are attracted to us and want to talk to us. This young man, this is a really good young man. I really appreciate him. He says, I want to do nursing because I find joy in helping and caring for others. Also, the human body is interesting. This young man does really well. He's young, and on his first day of clinical, I could see him. He was standing outside his patient's room, and he was almost like talking himself into going into that patient's room. And I stood there and watched them. And you know, that first day, I just have them go in. We're not giving meds. We're not really doing treatments unless something shows up. And they're going in, and I want to see how well they're communicating with the patient. I want to see how well they can get a history, how they interact, how they can form good rapport. And so, like, he stood there, and like it was like he was thinking. And finally, he sighed, and he went in. Some people are just very, like, especially ladies, some people are very maternal, and they're very open, and they can talk. You could tell that he was working. He was working hard to do what he thought he needed to do, and I appreciate that. And I know yesterday I was joking. I said, you know, I don't claim to be smart, but what word did I use? I'm not smart. I'm just diligent, or I persevere. And I think a lot in education, that's it. Like, just do the next thing. Intelligence is one thing, but somebody that has that stand fast, that determination to keep doing the next thing, sometimes it's just like living until the next assignment is done. And sometimes it's just living until that next test is over. ATI or HESI, whatever it is, just living until that moment, but just keep doing the next thing. That's the determination, that's the word. I'm not smart, I'm determined. That determination, I think, goes a long way, and this young man was determined. Okay, this young lady said, I was inspired to be a nurse after I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. The nurses in the hospital were amazing. This young lady says, I want to be a nurse because my mom had breast cancer, and I got to see behind the scenes of nursing and how they make a difference. This girl says, I want to be the person to make others feel like everything's going to be okay, but I want to be there for them on their worst day. This mom of three said, I was diagnosed with breast cancer at 25, and I admired the nurses that took care of me, so now I want to take back and take care of my people. And I think that we all have that story of what led us there. Could have been an interest in how the human body works. Could be a story like many of these. And I've heard some of your stories this weekend of how you started and why you started. And again, getting back, I want to tell you one of my stories, or my story, how I became into nursing. And how this is working out for me. When I was 9, I moved in with my grandma and Papaw. We call him Papaw in West Virginia. Papaw. And he was an alcoholic. And my grandma was a nursing assistant. He started driving, like it was the joke in the community that we didn't need to clean the ditch because Papaw was cleaning the ditches because he would like drive into them and clean them out. And he just wasn't acting right. And one day my grandma asked him, like, how much have you been drinking? And he said, you know, that the thing is, I haven't been drinking for the last month. Something's wrong. They took him to the doctor, and they were like, what? You know, they didn't really know what was going on. They diagnosed him with Parkinson's disease. But finally, Dr. Coughlin, Curtis and I was talking about him today. He just retired recently. Diagnosed him with a progressive neurological disease called progressive supranuclear palsy. Ring a bell to anybody? Some of you heard of that. Back in the 90s, there's still not a ton known about it, but there's a lot more known about it today than there was then. And so they treated it like Parkinson's, and it was just a progressive thing. He ended up bedfast for about a year. His mind was still good. There are some, like, dementia-related issues that go along with that. But for the most part, he was clear, except for the times that he thought he had to go to work. That was always difficult. I remember one day it was snowing so hard. And he used to work for a tannery when in the 50s. He worked for this tannery, and it was snowy outside, and the trapeze over his hospital bed, he was just pulling it and pulling it and pulling it. I said, Papa, what are you doing? He said, I'm pulling the hides. In his mind, he was still at the tannery working. But other than that, he knew everyone that came to see him. So when I was 9, you know, my grandma was working per diem at the hospital as a nursing assistant. My mom was going through some mental health issues, and my dad was a coal miner, and he was working a lot. So my sister and I moved in with Grandma and Papaw. And it worked out pretty good because we got off the school bus about 4 o'clock. She worked 3 to 11, and so I was 9, my sister was 11, we could get my Papaw supper. Like, she would make a roast or soup or something, and we would just heat it up and get him to bed and ourselves to bed. So throughout that time, I helped my grandma take care of my papaw, and you know, I was 11 years old, 10, 11 years old, and I would change his diapers, his pads, and I just thought it was part of everyday life. Like, it wasn't strange to me, and it wasn't odd that my friends didn't do that. It was just something that we did, and watching my grandma care for my grandpa was a beautiful testimony of how a husband and wife should be. She could have sent him to the nursing home, and there was a couple times I remember he was I think he tore up the batting and one of the chucks, the pads underneath, and it was all over the carpet. And she had had enough, and she told him, she said, his name was Bernard, "Bernard, if you wanted me to help you, you have to help me help you." And something happened, it clicked, and he was an alcoholic, and he was always good to me, but he wasn't always the nicest to my grandma. But he was very easy to take care of. And you wouldn't have thought that from his past life, from how he was. So when I was 18, I had been working at a grocery store in outside of Canaan Valley, West Virginia, and I was going to be the assistant manager. You know, I was going places. Assistant manager at a small supermarket. My grandma told me that I'd have to, he died when I was 13, and continued to live with my grandma. And when I was 18, I was going to be the assistant manager. And she told me, she said, "Matthew, if you become an assistant manager, you got to move out. But if you go to college, you can stay here as long as you're in college." Because she knew me, right? She was wise. She knew me. And so I didn't know what to do. So it was kind of like, what do you do when you don't know what to do? You go into education, right? Right? I shouldn't have said that because there's a lot of teachers here. And so my first 2 years of college I was an elementary education major with a specialty in special ed. But I really wanted to do nursing, but like I didn't know what people would think. Like a male nurse, you know, and I hadn't seen a lot of male nurses, but then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. So I applied. I went to Fairmont State University. And I applied. There were 400 applicants that year. They accepted 100. I thought, I'm never going to get in. And I got right in. Went right through and did well. But going back to that little grocery store, I still work there. I came home on the weekends and I worked there. And there was a local physician and his wife was a nurse who went to PA school. She didn't do the nurse practitioner route. She went from being a nurse to a physician's assistant. One day I was ringing her up and, you know, small town, everyone knows everyone. She said, "Matthew, where are you going to college?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to Fairmont and I'm studying nursing." And she said, "Don't do it. Don't do it. Do anything but nursing." And I was crushed. Like, I was crushed because all of my hopes and dreams were going to be a nurse. Kind of like the excitement that I see in these students their first day of classes when they get to take a pulse or they find out what a stethoscope does or they try to pronounce what the real name of a blood pressure cuff is. You notice I didn't say it. That excitement. And then this one lady kind of like she really made me question what I was doing. So those of you that work in hospitals, I want to ask you a question because I see this in every facility that I go to. We bring a group of nursing students on the floor, and what does that old cratchety nurse say? "Run! Don't do this! Don't do it!" Has anybody ever heard that? Heard a nurse or somebody say that to a nursing student or a resident or something like that? "Don't do it! Run!" And then they wonder why students don't want to work in that facility, right? And so that's, you know, that's one of the big things. Like, we can become cynical, especially in these high-stress environments. We can become cynical. We have a warped sense of humor. We probably say and do things that might not be, you know, chite and normal settings. But for us, it's just something that's normal, right? We talk about, you know, parts of the body that, you know, make the little old ladies in our congregation blush. And, but anyway, that's just part of who we are. However, like, one of the things, like, I try to remove my students from those negative conversations because I know how it has affected me and how it can affect them. You know, or you'll be sitting, you know, the students will be there doing their work and the nurses will be complaining about census or about this or about that. And you know what? I probably was in some of those circles complaining about some of those specific things. But it wasn't until I became a nursing instructor that I realized how detrimental that is, how detrimental that negative talk is. And one facility that we go to is one of the worst. and very few of our students sign up to work there. And a lot of it's because of that negative talk. So I do want to encourage you that if you see a student, a resident, and I'm not saying like, you know, something else. I heard someone say that they were just a CNA. Just a CNA. Man, you can do a lot as a CNA. You're just whatever, a paramedic, an EMT. You're just a this, you're just a that. Man, know your worth. Be confident in your work, right? I know they're so valuable and can do so many things. And you CNAs, you can teach nursing students a lot of things that they're not going to get from the nurses. Because you're going to have these nursing students that come in, and I'm seeing this more and more, they like checklists and they like tasks, and they're task-oriented. Anybody have seen that? They'll give this med, give this med, give this med, but they don't know the connection, why they're giving this med, and the implications or what they should be watching for later, or how this ties into this to ties into this. They're task-oriented. Nursing, or they're going to say, and I hate this, and I tell my students, I never want to hear them say this. If they're in the room and a patient needs to get on the bedpan, they better not call that nursing assistant to do it. If they do, they better have a good reason why they're doing that. And you explain that reason to that nursing assistant. You say, I am doing this charge, I am doing this discharge, or I'm hanging blood, I can't get them on the bedpan. Could you please do that for me? Not go into the room, they ask to get on the bedside commode, you tell the nursing assistant and you go and sit down. That gets me. That'll get me fired up. And I don't get fired up that often, but that's something that will fire me up. So, you nursing assistants, you can show them your day-to-day life. Show them what you're like. Occupational therapy, nursing students, they need to learn. Residents need to learn what your job is, what you're doing, so that they can help you later on. They need to know all of these aspects. So I encourage you to, because they're excited. Like, I love the excitement that these students have, and they're like, yeah, I gave a rectal Tylenol. Like, this is so exciting. Which side do I lay them on? Or you know what, I got to give a sub-Q insulin today. This is, you know, like, it's the highlight. You that went to nursing school, you were there. I was there. I did the same thing. I remember my first day of nursing school and my first checkoff where they watched me wash my hands, right? Like, that's exciting to these people. Use that excitement, use that positive energy for these students to be able to care for our patients more effectively. You know, that's my healthcare spiel. I know, hopefully, if you would ever come into contact with my students, you would do that for them, but you can do that for your grads there. So I told you the story about, I kind of got off track. I told you the story about my papa who had progressive supranuclear palsy. Recently in our church, there was an older couple that had no children. And his name was Martin Schrock. Our church is the Mountain Anthem Church. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Mountain Anthems. We don't travel as much anymore. But Martin Schrock did a lot of solos. He sang a lot. He was a very good man. He had a lot of passion when he sang. Him and his wife go to our church, have no children. He had been failing a little bit, and we had been in there off and on. They would come to our house, and I'd go over there to check on him, trying to figure out what had happened. He had some, you know, mini strokes and things like that. One day, his wife came to my house, and she handed me his recent doctor checkup, and she said, Matthew, look at this diagnosis. I looked at that diagnosis, and you know what his diagnosis was? Progressive supranuclear palsy. I had not taken care of another patient with progressive supranuclear palsy since I was 13 years old taking care of my papa. So God used that to care for this family in my church. And not only care, and sometimes, like, I would go over there, and I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, but I would go over there, and I would spend hours with them at their bedside. And a lot of times, I got to the point where I realized they didn't want me to fix anything. They just wanted me to listen to them, to validate their thoughts, to talk to them. And so I would spend a lot of time with him, and I would sit there, and it had been, you know, 20-some years since my papa, and I would look at him and I would see some of the same things, and I truly felt empathy You know the difference between sympathy and empathy? A lot of us are empaths, empathetic people, right? That's why we get so drained so easily, because we give so much of ourselves. But I could empathize with them. And I got to be with him. I wasn't there the day that he died, but I did get him resources that he needed. And I'm so honored that I could do that. And I actually got to speak at his funeral. And that was an honor for me, because here I was in a moment, and here was another woman displaying a beautiful relationship of caring for her husband, caring, human health experience, whatever those experiences are. So my encouragement to you, and I'll be closing here in a little bit, my encouragement to you is don't grow weary in doing good. Don't grow weary in being good. A lot of self-talk. If you're going to talk negative, and you know, this is the truth, this works. If you get up in the morning and you say, man, I didn't get enough sleep, I am tired. You're telling yourself you're tired, right? And so you're going to think, oh man, I'm tired. But like, if you get up and you say, you know what, I got 4 good hours of sleep. The kids didn't wake me up once last night. This is a beautiful cup of coffee, and it tastes so good. That positive talk really influences our day. So my encouragement to you is, don't grow weary in working good, right? My other encouragement is to, when you get into those moments of like, what did I do? Why am I here? Go back to why you started. Remind yourself why you're here, and that's what you're doing. Something else that, scripture that I've done a lot is be a doer. Don't be a hearer only. Be a doer of the word. And this truth right here that I have in front of me is steeped in how we should care for one another. And do it. Just don't hear it. So let's close with a little bit of prayer. And then I think we're going to pass the basket for an offering after I'm done praying.